from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. My next guest, you'll know Wendy Murphy, is a former DA, author, a law professor, someone who goes on quite often on television to talk about high-profile cases, and certainly she's an advocate for victims. Most recently, we've all heard about the bullying case about Phoebe Prince, and I thought, who better to bring on than Wendy Murphy? Hi, Wendy.
Hey, Dana, good to be with you.
Nice to have you back, and I know you're busy tonight, and I appreciate your time. The Phoebe Prince, we could probably put 15 other names to these sorts of cases, too, but in this particular case, share your thoughts, please.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many important facets to the story that we should talk about, but let's focus on the most recent developments. As probably some of your listeners have heard, Phoebe Prince, who was viciously harassed and attacked verbally and physically, and people call it bullying, but indeed, I think it was much worse than that.
Right.
Over the course of several months while she was in high school, a newcomer to the high school because she was recently living in the United States, having come here from Ireland, she ultimately couldn't take it any longer, and she took her own life in January of this year. The outrage was palpable right away because people just, you know, are sick to death of hearing about these stories of kids literally being unable to go to school and in some instances taking their own lives as sort of the desperate and only thing they can think of doing as a way of putting an end to the torture. So what happened to Phoebe, I think, was preventable, and that's really the story, and that's where we are now in Massachusetts. But the outrage is still very high here for a couple of reasons. Number one, the most recent development is that the prosecutor, after a lengthy investigation and a careful investigation, Betsy Scheibel, who's pretty good, mm-hmm. I mean, I've known her for a long time, she's tough, she decided to bring charges against 9 students, and that's good. Everybody's happy, and those charges include things like criminal harassment, civil rights violations, and against two of the guys, actually, certain rape charges were brought, statutory rape charges. And, you know, that's good because we want the behavior to be perceived as, criminal. If behavior is going to take human life, you want to use the heaviest hammer law can bring to bear.
Yep.
And that's a criminal prosecution. Lots of folks said there were no crimes, committed because it was all speech. Now we know that's not true, and certainly it's not news that if you criminally harass somebody and you keep doing it and doing it and doing it, it can rise to the level of conduct that does merit a criminal prosecution. The downside to the charges is that it did require an extensive amount of harm to Phoebe Prince in order to amass enough evidence to be able to bring charges, and that's why the public is angry that there isn't a more targeted crime on the books that simply puts a stop to bullying by criminalizing it in the immediate aftermath of the first incident. In other words, why should anybody have to go through a lot of it before the criminal justice system can get involved? So that's one issue. And the state legislature here has a bill that they've been toying with that could have created such a crime, and they declined to do so, and shame on them. They are really taking it on the, on a daily basis. They're taking it from the public because we the people, including me, I have kids in public school, I don't understand why the legislature wouldn't say in the aftermath of so many disasters and, you know, again, mm-hmm. the lives of children lost, wouldn't say, we're sick of it, we're going to pass a law saying bullying is a crime. And they're not coming up with good excuses. They're trying to pass a namby-pamby piece of nonsense legislation that basically says, well, we should do a better job and we should teach kids about bullying, but we're not going to make it a crime. And even if the teachers don't get involved, we're not going to really hold them responsible. So there's no teeth to the bill, Dana, and that's the problem. In fact, I've been saying in the commentary I've been doing, forget the bill has no teeth. In other words, there are no meaningful sanctions. The bill doesn't even have gums. You know, what's less than teeth? Gums. This bill doesn't even have those because There are no sanctions. If a bully keeps it up, this so-called anti-bullying law that we've proposed in Massachusetts will not bring any sanctions to bear on the bully. And if the schools find out about it and do nothing about it, the bill does nothing to sanction the teachers and the administrators. Which brings me to the other point about why the prosecutor, although it's good that she brought charges against the kids involved, is under some pressure now and is being criticized for not bringing any charges against the teachers and the administrators, even though some of them not only knew what was going on, but literally saw the bullying firsthand on the day that Phoebe Prince died and did nothing about it. That's pretty extraordinary. And, you know, in every state we have what's called mandatory child abuse reporting laws.
Right.
Which is to say, if you know that a child is being abused, you're required to call social services. And, you know, that should have happened here. And for mandated reporters like teachers and administrators who don't do what they're supposed to do in that regard, there's a crime called failure to file a mandatory report of abuse. And the prosecutor has yet to explain why, despite her expression of outrage at the failure of the school officials, she declined to prosecute any of them. And even if she did prosecute them, it's only a fine. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just such a small fine associated with failure to file a report, you would think she would do it as a symbolic gesture to send a message to other teachers and administrators. You better step it up. And, you know, in some school districts, teachers are great, but in some, they're not so great.
Right.
And what you want by passing laws that provide sanctions is a baseline of minimal respect for what the kids are going through. And a baseline means everyone gets punished if they don't do X. Right now, we have nothing. And it's pretty awful. So, you know, the sad story is Phoebe Prince has lost her life. She's not the first student to do so. She lost her life directly because she was tortured. And we don't have a whole lot to be proud of here in Massachusetts, because even in the aftermath of a disaster, we're not doing the right thing. The one thing I will say, though, Dana, and I hope folks will take a look at my column that I wrote. I've written actually two on this case at patriotledger.com. And one of the most important things I teach the reader is to understand that when state law doesn't do the right thing, which is true in a lot of jurisdictions in this country, you can go to federal court.
Right.
Why? Because bullying is almost always a form of targeted harassment and thus a violation of civil rights laws as a matter of federal law. So if the state law doesn't get it right, you can, as a parent worried about your child, you can go to federal court. For example, Phoebe, we know, was taunted and called slut and Irish slut, and things like that are expressions of discrimination, particularly the things that were targeted against her because of gender and that were sexual in nature. That's a violation of Title IX. I know people say, Title IX, doesn't that have to do with making sure girls have the same number of basketballs as boys? Yes, that's mm-hmm. part of it. But discrimination based on gender also includes sexual harassment. Sexual harassment includes things like bullying when it's targeted against a girl because of her gender or and it's based on sexuality. So if you're sexually harassed, we have to stop calling it bullying. Because when you go to school on behalf of your child and you call it bullying, the teachers are going to say, sorry, there are no laws against that. There's nothing we can do. And that's exactly what the school system told Phoebe Prince's family when they went repeatedly to school officials for help. They said, sorry, there are no laws against bullying. Had her family understood that it was their right to go into school and call it sexual harassment, a violation of Title IX under federal law, the school would have been shaking in its boots. They would have had an obligation, because this is what federal law provides, an obligation to provide prompt and equitable responses to what was going on with Phoebe. And if they didn't do it promptly and effectively, which is what federal law requires, the school system would have been sued in federal court for money damages by her family. That's why families have to understand, don't call it bullying. Call it a Title IX violation, which is sexual harassment. Call it a Title VI violation if it's racial harassment. Most bullying is, in fact, targeted against females based on sex and gender in this country, interestingly enough. But not all of it. So if you're targeted because you're, because of your ethnicity, because of your race, because you have disabilities or you're a special ed student, which is also a big problem. If you're targeted because of who you are, you have a right to go into federal court and to demand that the school treat it as a federal civil rights issue. And that means they have to respond promptly and effectively. And if they don't, families in this country have to start bringing federal lawsuits against these schools, because we are sick and tired of kids dying.
Is there a political correctness here, Wendy, when it comes to cases like this, that the people just don't want to step forward and say that there is such a problem with, and I don't like the term bullying either, with the harassment, because we keep hearing about case after case and these young people taking their lives because they just can't take it anymore. And it's time that an example was set that, you know, maybe tries to put a stop to this.
Well, I'm not so sure it's political correctness, although there is certainly a vein of debate in on this issue that has free speech advocates saying, let's not clamp down on ugly and nasty and hateful speech because it's not worth it. You know, the First Amendment is too precious. And, you know, that's fine, except that it is worth it. You know, we have restrictions on free speech in all sorts of places in the law. You can't make threats against people. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. You can't libel and slander people. And those restrictions, you know, don't really undermine freedom. In fact, in many ways, they enhance freedom because they protect targeted people from feeling terrorized and terrified as they go about their lives, which should be constitutionally free from targeted harassment. So, you know, I think that is part of it, and it's a bunch of hooey. But it's also really, Dana, I mean, down and dirty here, like so many cases, the real ugliness behind all this is that teacher unions and lobbyists on behalf of the school districts in terms of the insurance companies who would have to pay the claims if we had more lawsuits, they're the ones that are going to the state legislature saying, don't make liability an issue. Don't create liability for the schools. Don't create liability for the kids, because they're all about trying to save money and avoid liability. You know, that's their mindset about this. If we keep avoiding liability and getting immunity from the state legislatures, we'll save money. And that's fine. You know, they do probably save a bit of money, but nobody thinks money is more important than a child's life.
Yep.
And nobody wants to take pencils out of a school district that's impoverished. You know, we know how bad the economy is. Nobody wants to take money away from schools. Education is important. We want money to be there. We want them to stay funded. But remember, we're talking about insurance company dollars, not school system dollars. We're talking about making insurance companies step up to the plate and not only pay claims when appropriate, but because they'd like to save money and not pay claims, they have to take responsibility for injecting themselves into the school system's management of these issues and putting in place policies and procedures to truly and effectively prevent bullying and harassment, not so much because it's going to save them money, but because it's going to save kids' lives. The way to change policies and procedures is to file lawsuits, not because I want lawyers to make money, although, you know, some lawyers would probably take advantage. I do this work for free.
Right.
And it's part of the work that I do, you know, because I care about violence prevention and I do a lot of pro bono work. So it isn't about money. But when you say to a school, you are going to pay through the nose if you don't put meaningful policies and procedures in place to protect kids from this behavior, guess what's going to happen? Tomorrow morning, meaningful policies and procedures will be in place. And let me end by saying this one thing. Some people say, well, we don't want schools to worry about lawsuits. We want them to worry about teaching. And that's fine. That's a lovely idea, aspirational, nice. But perpetrators, bullies, the harassers, they already have a right to sue if the school system punishes them.
Right.
In other words, we already have a doctrine in law that says if the bully feels he was wrongly punished, sent to detention or suspended for a couple days, guess what? He can sue the school for wrongful discharge, wrongful punishment, wrongful this, wrongful that. If you're going to allow the bully to sue, which is already the case in every state in this country, then you have to let the victim sue too to create equality in the mindset of the teachers when they're thinking about the issue. Because what they do now is they see the bullying, they see the threats, and they turn a blind eye because they call the lawyer and the lawyer says, don't do anything to help the victim, because if you punish the bully, he's going to get a lawyer and sue us.
Yeah.
Nobody ever says, help the victim, because if you don't, she's going to sue us. And all I'm asking for is that we create some kind of equality in terms of what the schools are worried about when it comes to liability exposure, so they don't make money-based decisions about whether or not to help a desperate child like V.B. Prince.
Absolutely. Just quickly before I let you go, your upcoming article for the Patriot Ledger is titled, These Guys Are Real Heroes, Tell us quickly about it.
Yeah. Oh, well, thanks for reminding me. I know I wanted to cover this quickly. It comes out this Saturday in the Patriot Ledger, patriotledger.com. What I wrote about, because April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and this has been my specialty, obviously, for, you know, 25 years, I try to use my column every April to say something about who's doing a good job when it comes to this issue, this epidemic, frankly. And this year, I chose to focus on guys because so much good stuff is being done by men. You know, there are groups like Men Can Stop Rape and Men Against Violence Against Women and all kinds of organizations that are led by men, controlled by men, and done by men that are so effective because they speak to men. And I'm going to mention a few of those in my article. And I also wanted to take advantage of the opportunity to highlight something extraordinary. You know, I sit on the board, and I indeed once represented a woman named Alexa Brancini Sardina, and she was a client of mine 10 years ago. She was brutally raped at Boston University. Her family formed a foundation, the Alexa Foundation, so that they would be able to give money to victims who need funds to help them defray costs associated with testifying in court, because Alexa's family had to fly back and forth from New York to Boston to be part of the trial against the man who brutally raped Alexa at Boston University. That guy was convicted. He will spend most of the rest of his life behind bars. But the family thought to itself, how do poor people afford these expenses? And I said to them, well, they don't. And sometimes prosecutors have to give bargain basement discount plea bargains to the bad guy because they can't afford to help the victim travel back and forth. So the family formed a foundation. The Alexa Foundation is the only organization of its kind in the country that gives money to victims to make sure that they don't have to spend their own dollars to make sure that justice is served. And because of my long-term friendship with Bill O'Reilly, I asked him a couple of years ago if he was willing to get involved, if this was something he would get involved in. And the guy was so good about it. He didn't say, you know, how big is the board? Who's on the board? He didn't ask anything like that. He just said, Wendy, that's an important cause. Sign me up. And so, you know, Bill O'Reilly is one of the heroes I mentioned in my piece because he's donated his time. This is now the second year in a row. He's come down to Palm Beach to give a speech for free, which is worth a lot of money if you know Bill O'Reilly.
Yep.
He also donated a substantial amount of his own personal dollars to the foundation. This year it was at the Mar-a-Lago, which is Donald Trump's place down in Palm Beach. So Donald came and his wife Melania was there, and they were just delightful, and we were so glad to have them there. The place was fantastic, and frankly, what was wonderful about it was the room was full of guys, and frankly, a lot of very wealthy, powerful men in Palm Beach, you know, an extremely wealthy community, where you might think, oh, they don't want to get involved in this issue. Let me tell you something, they did want to get involved, and they came out in huge numbers to help. And what I analogized it to was, you know, you think about guys, they get together on a golf course, a fancy golf course, and they broker business deals, and that's what they talk about. Well, this was a dinner of those same guys, only they were talking about how to fight sexual violence, how to help victims, how can we fund their needs to make sure that justice is served. And it was extraordinary. So kudos to Bill O'Reilly and Donald Trump. And another guy there, Heath Evans, who you may know from the Super Bowl winning New Orleans Saints,
right,
was there. He has a foundation that he founded in his wife's name after he learned that she had been a child sex abuse victim. So incredibly strong guys, big he-men athletes, wealthy guys, influential, powerful news guys, all in this room for the first time ever in Palm Beach standing up against sexual violence. And I'll tell you, it gave me goosebumps. And so I write about that in my column this week, and I want to share it with your listeners, Dana, because I'll tell you, it's a new day when you get guys of that magnitude stepping up to the plate on this issue.
Sounds great. Wendy, as always, thank you. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Dana. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Wendy Murphy, and check out her article on the patriotledger.com. And yeah, kudos to Bill O'Reilly and all those guys that are out there doing their bit for victims of violence, rape victims, sexual assault victims, whatever. There are guys that care, including yours truly. We'll be back in just a minute, and we'll have the gals from two other gals that care from Justice Interrupted, Stacey Dietrich and Robin Sachs, here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Okay, we're back. You know these two gals as the hosts of Justice Interrupted, heard Sunday nights on Blog Talk Radio. Go to justiceinterrupted.com. Robin Sachs, former felony prosecutor. Stacey Dittrich, she's the police officer, and they bring cases forward where justice has been interrupted. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening.
Happy Easter to you, or what's left
Thank
of it.
You? Yeah, back at
ya. Sunday. You got a special coming up on Justice Interrupted. I want to start with that, and we got lots more to talk about the murder of Renee Pagel. I hope I'm saying that properly. Stacey, tell us what's going on with that case.
Well, the Renee Pagel case is a very interesting case. It's one that we did early on in the Justice Interrupted shows. It actually occurred back in 2006. It is a story of Michigan mom Renee Pagel, mother of three children, that was going through a particularly vicious divorce. Very friendly, very well-known woman, loved throughout her community. Just to give you an explanation of what kind of person she was, she had actually donated a kidney to one of the students that she taught, their father. Days before her kidney surgery, she had changed the beneficiary on her life insurance policy, no longer naming her estranged husband, Michael Pagel, as the beneficiary. And just 2 days before her surgery, she had reported to friends various threats that he was allegedly making, and you know, spoke out that she was in fear for her life. So as this woman lay recovering in her bed from, you know, giving a stranger a kidney, she was stabbed so viciously, and of course murdered in her own bed. Michael Pagel was named by the police as a person of interest. However, there has never been an arrest, and he currently retains sole custody of their three children.
Wow.
And it's really been a type of outrageous case, a case that Robin and I, you know, pretty much defines the term justice interrupted.
Yep.
And, you know, these particular cases that we feature that don't get the, you know, nationwide media attention, we don't like to forget about, and this particular case kind of hit home with us. So we decided to bring it back to the forefront and do a one-hour special Justice Interrupted on it, on Sunday.
Robin, why hasn't this case got national coverage? Like, good grief. I know there are lots out there, and we can probably talk about 10 others tonight, but this sounds like something that should have been picked up.
Yeah, I mean, Dana, you know you're preaching to the choir with that. That's the million-dollar question, is why has this case? I mean, it's, frankly, it's got all the ingredients of what you would think that national television would pick up on. I mean, a murder in a bed, a custody given to an estranged husband, life insurance policies changing. I mean, you would think that it's got all the stuff that normally makes headlines, but for whatever reason, it hasn't, and it is truly a case of justice being interrupted. Not, you know, Michael being the most kind of the forefront person of interest is one aspect, but you know, it's also what the family, the society, we all have a right to have answers as to what is going on in this investigation. And yesterday, I sat in the Los Angeles courtroom observing the Conrad Murray case, and I sat there watching the probably 200 fans out there in every national media outlet. You can imagine, and I, again, you know, this is what we talk about all the time on your show and on Justice Interrupted. I was thinking, I can't believe the cameras, the attention, the fans, all the stuff that's going on here around this case. And Stacey and I have the Pagel case coming up this weekend, and not one camera has shown up.
Wow.
And it's devastating.
Where's the investigation at, Stacey? Is it just gone cold now?
It's still open, and, you know, we had asked members of the prosecutors and the lead investigators to come on the show, which they declined because the case still is open. The lead investigator, it's the Kent County Sheriff's Department in Michigan. the sheriff's department there recently erected billboards throughout the area asking for anyone to come forward with information on the case. To my knowledge, there hasn't been. But, you know, in a case like this, I'm not, you know, being a police officer, and you noted this, Dana, with such a brutal homicide like that, there's, you would think, just a plethora of evidence left and evidence collected. And you couple that with motive and previous threats and, as Robin stated, life insurance. And, you know, what's disturbing about this is, Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you, but you're sounding like you're a DA putting a case on right now.
We have to put that type of hat on as investigators before we present it to you folks, because we know what questions you're going to throw back at us. But, you know, we all know it only takes probable cause to indict or to make an arrest. And I personally, based on everything I've seen in this case as an investigator, that there was overwhelmingly probable cause there. And we know the term, you know, a ham sandwich can be indicted. I truly believe that had this gone to the grand jury, that there would have been absolutely overwhelming indictment against the person of interest in this case.
I hate to ask this question, Robin, but I've seen it, and I'm sure you have too, but is there a prosecutor in this case that's looking for too many outs rather than looking for what they can prosecute?
Well, that's kind of, you're singing my song there, too. It's another one of those on that soundtrack of Justice Interrupted, because that's exactly right. I mean, it's interesting, you know, you hear in Hollywood that it's always easier to say no versus saying yes. And in the book publishing world, publishers can say no instead of saying yes. But prosecutors, cops, judges, law enforcement, we work for the people, and they are entitled to yes more than they are entitled to no, as far as I'm concerned. And Stacey's right. I agree that there seems to be enough for probable cause. I do think that, you know, you have to think longer than probable cause, because you do have to always consider that the ultimate burden of proof is reasonable doubt, so you want to make sure you have that. But, you know, looking for outs and difficult cases are out there, and, you know, sometimes you gotta, I can't see the hang-up in this case, and I would want to know, and I think the family is entitled to an explanation of what's the issue.
Yeah, exactly. If you're just tuning in, the girls from Justice Interrupted are here, Stacey Dietrich and Robin Sachs. Stacey, with your police hat on now, and I don't mean literally, but talking as...
Actually, Dana, I'm wearing it.
Oh, are you? Jeez.
Oh,
just for my show, okay. The cops are... Are under fire, literally. We talked about it last week on the show, where the nut jobs are out there thinking of killing a cop and then attacking the funeral for the police officer, because we all know that when a police officer dies, thousands will come from across North America to pay tribute to their fallen comrade. Things are getting tougher out there for us, sir, Gal. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it's interesting that you brought that up, and I'm just touching on, you know, I am speaking at a benefit this weekend by the Cleveland Police Department. It's called Salute to Our Heroes, which does raise money for the families of fallen police officers. I'm co-hosting that with former Cleveland Browns player Reggie Rucker. So, yes, they definitely need to be honored, and that aspect, and the families definitely need help financially and emotionally. That said, touching on the militias, which are extremely prevalent throughout my area. I have, in fact, personally been sued by the militia before. They're a very powerful group. They have a stringent knowledge of the law. I saw them put a lien on a common police court judge's home for 5 years. I mean, their ability to do these things is very methodic. And before, you know, we kind of brushed off, you know, the militias, you know, just kind of a group of, you know, screaming demons, I guess. As the economy continues to go downhill and we've got this political eruption going on, what you're seeing is more and more people joining these types of groups, and specifically in this area where they have now completely diminished. And when I say diminished, there is no longer law enforcement for 70,000 people in the county that I worked. You're going to see more and more people gravitating towards groups like these because their attitude is, my gosh, you know, the state's not protecting me. I don't have police protection. I need to learn how to protect myself. And when you're in a cohesive group like that, you tend to feel more safer and most importantly, a little more powerful. And I think that we're going to really start seeing these types of groups coming out. And, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's right or left, and each side can throw jabs at the other, whether it's right wing or it's left wing. I mean, this is a specific group of people. You know, I'm conservative. Robin's on the liberal side. I certainly would never go out and join a militia. Neither would she. Many people I know would never do that. So it is a growing problem, though. You know, people that are frustrated with losing their jobs and have nothing to do all day. You know, they were probably unstable or had a violent history or a criminal history to begin with. And so this is their out to gravitate towards these types of groups. And again, you know, I am stopping short of saying it's a definite, but I actually look for something around this month, around the April 19th, 20th date. This is probably as heated as I've seen things in years, and I specifically think these groups that we just saw in the news that were arrested, they said they were going to make an April attack. I would fair to say it was probably going to be the April 19th or 20th date.
Yeah, listen, you be careful out there, I'll tell you. It's a different world that we're policing in. I'm in the twilight of my career, but even being out on the road like I am, the people, the respect is just gone, and the ideology, Robin, out there is just nuts, and for lack of a better term. And it's not right or it's not left. It's just crazy. And I do blame the courts for some of this because the accountability thing, and I know I preach on that on this program, is just not there. There's some states and some provinces in Canada where you pretty much get away with anything.
Well, that's exactly right. I'm in a very precarious position nowadays because as I and you guys are probably in a similar precarious position nowadays in that you know, law enforcement, prosecutors, the justice system, those are our peeps. Those are our own. You know, those are the people who are our colleagues, the people that we know what, you know, the inner workings of the system that they work and the problems and the unappreciation and so forth. And then, you know, we also have this media hat that we have watching these cases. And the precarious position comes when you start calling out the poor prosecutors, judges, law enforcement, etc., and yet want to say, and by the way, honor the good guys. It's very, very difficult. And when you talk about accountability, I think there's a lack of general accountability all the way through our society. We just had a horrific case here in California where a Westminster police detective just got accused of rape of a Ontario girl, and how he was caught was that he by accident left a service revolver in her car following the rape.
Jeez.
And, you know, you hear a case like that, and that case, you know, every defense attorney is going to have a field day with talking about that and voir dire of other cases, and yet there's all of this lack of accountability in individual people who are not police officers or DAs or judges. And it's rampant, and it's sick, and it's systemic. It's just, I don't get it. It's not just the economy. It's all around. There's, you know, a lack of pride. There's where, you know, that we have in our society, our system, and our laws.
Robin Sachs and Stacey Dietrich are here from Justice Interrupted. Check out their webpage at justiceinterrupted.com and their special this Sunday about the murder of Renee Pagel. Stacey Dietrich, I won't get you to comment on the boss that you work for, and I won't comment on the boss that I work for, but one boss
I'm not technically working for him anymore. I did retire early. Yeah, I still sworn underneath this particular sheriff as, you know, a special deputy. So I still do hold my arrest powers commissioned under that particular agency. So
well, but one I would like to work for would be Joe Arpaio, and I don't know if you've heard the the most recent story. In fact, my daily commentary tomorrow, for those of you listening live, deals with this. Is Sheriff Joe thinks that his prisoners in the 10th City are just too damn fat. And if he is going to allow them to watch TV, they're going to burn off some of that fat in order to watch TV. And what he's got is he's hooked up some bicycles to the power generator. And in order to watch TV for an hour, the prisoner's got to get on the bike and ride for an hour to give enough juice. To
that is so, so awesome.
That is true. I'm just curious on your thoughts on that. Of course.
Well, let me tell you something, and I don't think that people quite realize, you know, we built a new jail for about $10 million 2 years ago. Funny now that everybody lost their jobs, but this beautiful new jail before the jail was disgusting. And but let me explain what people don't realize is in our county jail, we had one inmate that said there was too long of a time between lunch and dinner and food. And the court ruled against the county. So every day at 4, the corrections officers would be shoveling these trays of donuts. Each inmate would get a donut that would keep them between lunch and dinner. And let me tell you about Thanksgiving. These inmates were shipped in turkey, Sara Lee pies, I mean, all the fixings like you couldn't even imagine. I'm sure for some of them, the Thanksgiving meal that they got inside the Richland County, Ohio jail was probably the best they'd ever have in their life. And I find that downright appalling.
Yep.
I really, really do. And, you know, we had another awesome sheriff on our show. He's cracking down John Montgomery from
he's a
Baxter. Yeah, Baxter, Arkansas. He was nominated for the America's Most Wanted All-Star. And I'll tell you, I think he's going to ride on Joe Arpaio's tails there for a while. He's catching up to him. But we had extra, you know, with all the layoffs, a couple of the corrections officers I know actually went out and got hired by Arpaio and are now working out there.
You know, and we need more of that. We need more positive press, and America's Most Wanted does a good job when it comes to promoting police officers.
I have a big issue, though, Stacey. I think that I agree with you on the Thanksgiving meals and having getting the banquet of the century in jail, but... You know, good for the sheriff or corrections officers for doing something to get, you know, the fat problem under control. Not to mention, you know, you got a burn to earn, I guess. And I liked it.
I was saying go Joe Arpaio.
Yes.
I like that. I love that.
Okay.
And I'm kind of dogging my own here, you know, by saying we have to give these pathetic thugs donuts.
That's fantastic.
You know?
Yeah,
it should be across the board. And one of the things I loved about Sheriff Arpaio is, you know, these inmates in the certain dorms and the quads in the jail, you know, they have their choice of flipping through the TV channel because the law requires that they have to be able to watch television. And I believe Sheriff Arpaio said, okay, you can watch television. That doesn't say what you have to watch. And I think he put it on C-SPAN 24 hours or something, or the Weather Channel, something. And that's what he plays. That's what they have to watch 24 hours a day, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Robin Sachs covering Conrad Murray and all the prescription drug abuse. I'm reading a story here about the actor Corey Haim, who just recently passed away in Hollyweird Land, allegedly obtained 553 doses of prescription drugs from 7 different pharmacists in a month. His coming out here right now, and again, we're seeing allegedly. It's such a huge problem with prescription drug abuse and doctor shopping and these loony doctors that are out there doing what they do. I think Conrad Murray, some of the stories we're seeing now, says that his defense will be Michael Jackson killed himself. Let's talk some more about the problem with prescription drugs and doctors.
Well, you know, the phrase has been coined, the prescription drug cartel lives and breathes here in good old sunny Los Angeles, and particularly for those who have access and money to be able to doctor shop. It is a real issue. it is not a new issue. I think that what's new is that we as law enforcement and we as society are deciding to turn to the criminal justice system to deal with this prescription drug cartel. And I find it to be really fascinating in a state right now where you're going to have the legalization of marijuana very likely on the next ballot.
Right.
You have all sorts of, we already have the medicinal marijuana passed. We've had every single type of proposition and law that could be passed that says, you know, drug offenders should be given treatment, and it's all treatment. And so you would think that there's like kind of a softening of the war on drugs here in California, and then all of a sudden you see this other aspect of some of these very challenging, very difficult cases, and actually seeing the prosecutors doing something about it. And I think that we have an obligation, and they, you know, these people who are prescribing drugs are causing, you know, potentially greater issues than those in the illegal land.
Yeah, but Stacy, when the public look at cases like this, whether it's a Hollywood freak getting all these pills or somebody smoking dope or whatever, they will say, well, they're doing it to their own body. It doesn't really bother me. It's not affecting me. And there's a kind of a nonchalant, we don't really care attitude. In fact, I did a story a couple of weeks ago on the problems in Mexico and how unsafe it is to be there because of the drug cartels and the police officers that are basically getting their heads handed to them, and I mean that literally. And I got slammed by some of the pro-drug people out there saying, well, if they would just stop enforcing drug laws, everyone would be happy. Your thoughts as a police officer?
See, that is something that sends me completely over the edge. And let me tell you, you know, Oprah was here a few years ago. We had the highest amount of heroin running through here in the entire Midwest. I can attest on my shift. One particular day, I had 3 overdoses under the age of 20 years old. And yes, they are doing that to their own body, but let me explain something to these naysayers and pro-drug people out there. When these people blow through their life savings, they no longer have the money
Yep.
to pay for their drugs. What do they start doing? They walk into gas stations and put a gun in the face of the clerk, steal from the gas station. They take their 7-year-old and pimp out their 7-year-old child, which is basically a gang rape in exchange for drugs. They steal, they assault, they commit violent felonies in an attempt to get their hands on these drugs where they're, quote, just hurting themselves. They're not just hurting themselves, they're victimizing people. Once their habit grows and elevates into a certain area, they will take anybody and anyone down with them to get their hands on their drugs. And that includes, you know, little innocent children, innocent business owners, somebody parked, you know, at a stoplight waiting for it to turn green and getting carjacked, you know. So for those people, I just want to boy, I could have a violent episode there. It makes me very, very angry.
Yep. No, me too. But
no, I that is something, because you know, yep. I've had to see that, and it's it is just horrific. You know, someone takes their 7-year-old and says, "I want my Vicodin, I want my Percocet, and I want my heroin. Here's my 7-year-old. For you can keep her for an hour, but just give me the drugs when you're done." You know, and people are like, oh, no, that's not what happens. Yes, I can tell you it happens.
The intervention shows, Robin Sachs, you're more involved with television now than the courtroom. But when you see the intervention shows, and they all have them, you hear pros and you hear cons. But I like the fact where it actually shows the, you know, it can happen to anyone sort of situation as far as the addiction, but to some, and I've heard this too, is that it glorifies the addiction. Your thoughts on that type of reality programming?
Well, I think anytime that you look at the celebrity, Hollywood, reality, TV media as the barometer of what, you know, of what an issue is, that you always run the risk of glamorization. I mean, look at the Bling Ring and also in Los Angeles, you know, that group of teenagers going out and stealing to get handbags of Lindsay Lohan and Paris Hilton and all that looks glamorous too.
Yep.
I have to tell you, when Lindsay Lohan had a stint in a rehab, and I heard the description of it, and I think Brittany did too, I heard the description of it, and it sounded fabulous to me. Massages, yoga, life on the beach. I mean, who couldn't benefit from that kind of vacation, as it seems? And that's just, I think, not just the risk of the intervention world from the media point of view, but I think it's the risk of what the perception of intervention is, you know, generally. There are programs that are more serious than others, and I think that the glamorization is just like a lot of things on TV, is you're seeing the most extreme cases of intervention and intervention lifestyles and so forth. And, you know, we just have to keep ourselves in check. The reality is most people don't get the benefit of being able to afford any sort of residential intervention treatment like we see. I mean, the common person, if they're going to deal with their addictions in any way, are going to free 12-step meetings that address their issues. And it's a constant battle. It's a constant fight. It's constant relapses and falling off the wagon. And it's daily intensive work, and that part doesn't get put on front of the camera.
And you're right, and Stacy, being someone who has been on the front lines, so to speak, and in the houses of the crack dealers and the heroin addicts and the so-called people that look normal, and you see that they have a huge problem with cocaine. Are these types of programs doing a good job portraying it, or is it just trying to grab ratings?
I think it's trying to grab ratings, and I will disagree to a point. I did watch that show once, and I thought, wow, this is wonderful, only because these people look like they went through a garbage disposal,
mm-hmm.
and they act like they looked so horrific at their skin, their teeth. They just looked disgusting. And I thought, boy, if you really want to look and see what you're going to look like, but unfortunately, it is not realistic. The drug treatment programs, we have our drug courts, where the drug courts are attempting to court mandate some of these people into treatment, but these treatment programs are state funded. They're not lengthy by any means. If you want to go to a a very good treatment center, you're looking upwards of $10,000+, and most people can't afford that, especially when they're addicted to heroin, because they've sold everything that they have and have no money. So, you know, it's a slippery slope. You can look at that and say, yeah, rehab looks amazing. I can get a massage and get weaned off of heroin and my prescription drugs. But, some of the cases here, the rehab facilities prescribe the Suboxone, which is a counter to the heroin, to wean these kids off of heroin. And once they were out and taking their Suboxone, they learned that if they drank alcohol coupled with the Suboxone, it would give them the heroin effect. Unfortunately, when they started doing it in higher quantities, it would kill them. And so we had a lot of deaths due to the Suboxone as well. But, you know, it's a battle that an addiction on that point, and look at Corey Haim. I mean, an addiction like that, you need some serious, serious treatment. Drug courts aren't going to do it. And these people don't have the money to get the treatment that they really require, and it's really sad.
Absolutely. We're just finishing up with Robin Sachs and Stacy Dietrich here. What's going on with you this week, Robin?
What is going on with me this week? That's a really good question. On Friday. I don't know what's going on. On Friday, I'm going up to Sacramento. I'm going to a California Protected Parents seminar where they're going to be talking about whistleblowing and child sexual abuse cases. So I'm going up to meet a bunch of law enforcement, social workers, advocates, prosecutors, and so forth, and speak at a conference there on Friday. So that's great. I covered as I said, Murray and Cork. And then we're really excited about the show of Justice Interrupted on Sunday. We've been just really enjoying being able to bring awareness to the cases that so badly need attention, and we hope that your listeners will join us on Sunday.
Absolutely. The website is justiceinterrupted.com. Make sure and tune in this Sunday for a special on the murder of Renee Pagel. Robin's website, robinsacks.com. Stacy's website, stacydietrich.com. They're always welcome here. Thank you, gals.
Thank you, Dana. Have a great week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, that's my gals from Justice Interrupted, and make sure and check out that the Renee Pagel case sounds unbelievable. You know, donating a kidney and then getting killed, murdered in your bed after you recovered or while you're recovering, and why doesn't the news media pick up on stories like this? Like, I'm not saying the Anthony case isn't an important case. Of course it is. It's one that's far from being over, and we need to hear a lot more. But we don't need to hear a lot of the crap that's out there right now. The Joy Rays and the Leonard Padillas and he you know, the ones that like to insert themselves into a case to make themselves look important, but really their whole contribution is next to nothing. They're looking for their 15 minutes of fame. That's my opinion. And sadly, some of the cable news shows that are out there glom onto that. Is glom a word? I don't know. And they go on and on and on and on with it. Talk about Kaylee Anthony, the victim. I don't really care about Casey Anthony. I hope that the trial will bring around justice. But the story is far from being told. Peterson the same way. There's all sorts of different cases out there. But we need to hear more about the cases that are unsolved. And, you know, Renee Pagel is one that we had never heard about before. And the media, for whatever reason, decides that they don't want to pick up on them. I'm not sure. Anyway, that's tonight's show. Our website is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. You can pick up the show live. Your podcasts of past shows, listen to our daily commentary, and tomorrow we talk a little bit about Joe Arpaio making his fat prisoners ride the bike a little bit to get power to their TVs. I just think that's fantastic. Way to go, Sheriff Joe, for doing that, and I'm sure the ACLU and all the left-wing nut jobs out there that will say these prisoners need and deserve rights and deserve their television and their donuts will complain, but we need more sheriffs like Sheriff Joe. And make sure and go to the America's Most Wanted webpage and vote for your favorite police officer or emergency service worker. They always do a good job on that that program that they have there. And I think the winners get $10,000, and the more promotion we get for our men and women in emergency service, the better. That's it. I appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.